Welcome to a podcast of The Mike Novak Show. You can listen to Mike live Sunday mornings from 9 to 11 Central on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
So the wand is a British invention, but the idea isn't as crazy in Britain because, as you know, it rains all the freaking time. So they don't have to pump 4 billion gallons of drinking water every day into their lawns. On the downside, they never get to see the sun. Also, James Murdoch. So, Hank, we're all biased toward the status quo. Not to beat a dead horse, but that's the only reason we still have pennies. Like, if someone tried to introduce a coin that was worth a thousandth of a dollar today, people would be like, that's insane. Well, it's equally insane to have a coin that's worth a hundredth of a dollar, but since it already exists, we're all okay with it. So, Hank, if you can close your eyes and imagine a world in which there's a huge vegetable garden in the front of every home in suburban America, and there's a multi-billion dollar industry of people taking care of these vegetable gardens and watering them and helping you to harvest the crops. Your food costs go down, you have more vegetables in your diet, we use less oil and gas to transport food, but then one day you decide to rip up your vegetable garden and become the first person in your neighborhood to lay down turf grass. Your neighbors are gonna come over and be like, hey, what's the new thing? And you'll be like, that's turf grass. And they'll be like, great, what do you cook it with? And you're like, no, you don't eat it. In short, Hank, your neighbors are gonna think you're crazy, partly because they have status quo bias toward this world in which all front yards are composed of vegetable gardens, and partly because they're right.
Live from the beautiful Showcase Studios on North Milwaukee Avenue in Chicago, in between Andy's Deli and Lido Banquets, and just a pierogi's throw away from the Polish capital of the Western Hemisphere. It's The Mike Novak Show, Chicago's only locally broadcast deep green gardening and environment program, heard every Sunday right here on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
Good planets hard to find, temperate zones and tropic climes. True currents and thriving seas, wind blowing through breathing trees, strong ozone and safe sunshine. Well, good planets are hard to find. Good planets are in the man.
This hour of the Mike Novak Show is brought to you by The Care of Trees, a Davey company. Their business is people and their love for trees. And by Recycled Granite, featuring eco-friendly split stone veneers and handmade products by individuals with disabilities. Go to recycledgranite.com. He's a legendary, charismatic megafauna in his own mind. Here he is, Mike Novak.
And as I said to Lisa, just unzip that thing and open it up and then put it up there in the corner. We're actually going professional here on the show this morning. We've got the banner. I might actually have you take a photo of that at some point.
Yeah, I've never seen this banner.
You've never seen this?
No.
It's because I never bring it. I never remember to bring it. I mean, if I left it here, I'd have to store it in a closet or something, and then it would disappear. And then, you
take the pipes there. You got there's on the underside.
Well, Mike, I wanted to say that this past weekend, I've been greeted leaving the house with this lovely cardinal singing.
Oh, you got a cardinal, huh?
There's hope. For spring.
There is. And, you know, we're going to have Rick DeMaio here at 9:45 this morning. He sent me a thing that is the harbinger of spring, and it scares the dickens out of me, which is warm weather coming fast. He sent me this report that said, look out for flooding.
Yes, on
by the end of the week. Yikes.
Yep. Okay. Wait. Bring that over here. There they are. Yeah, I got to get those out of there.
Yep.
You've done this before. You've set up shop at shows before, haven't you? You got to find the poles, and then you put
Lisa,
the poles.
Lisa, our in-house convention.
That's right. Lisa Albrecht is working on the banner. Sarah Batka is answering the phones. Mr. Brown Thumb is in the studio here with Isaiah, who's
Garden Posse.
That's right. Hey, Isaiah, how you doing?
Good. You?
Good. I'm good. You know, as soon as we get the banner up, everything's copacetic. But before we do that, as Lisa's doing that, and I am, see? Wow, you can hear it. You can hear her
We'll
I know. It's pretty, tall, isn't that?
It is.
Do you need some help with that? You think you can do that? Ramon, go over there and help her. While you guys are doing that, I want to show you something I got. My birthday was, several weeks ago. And this is one of the gifts I got. Oh, you broke it.
I'm going to love your birthday gift.
You like this? Here's how it works.
Oh, it's awesome.
It's a frog that my friend Mac got for me. And I think she got it in D.C. I'm trying to remember.
Oh, it's fantastic. Wait,
now so cool. Put it in that corner because that's where we'll be shooting from.
Oh, okay, I was thinking so that Sarah could see you.
Oh, well, we could do that, but I think you'll see the banner better over in the corner. Do you think we should have set this up before the show started?
Yeah,
I don't know.
There we go, see? Doesn't that look good? You're going to take a photo of that, Sarah, okay. Before, with our guests and stuff. But this frog, it's a wooden frog.
Oh, it's adorable.
And it actually kind of sounds like crickets chirping.
It does.
So we could get some folks... You know, if we're not getting an answer from somebody, I just bring this out and go.
I have a CD from the Forest Preserve of the sound of, I think, 20 regional frogs.
Why don't you bring it in?
I can bring it in.
I'll play anything.
It's you totally know that. Cool.
In fact, that's my new motto. It's, we play anything.
It was so that, because I signed up to be a spotter.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think they're going to, I think they're doing frogs again.
You just keep talking.
I think they're doing frogs again this year. But I signed up so that I could identify frogs. You go out to the Forest Preserve in the spring when they first come out of hibernation and during mating season, and then you identify them by sound. But I've listened to the CD 100 times and they all sound
does
the same.
Does it put
to
you
me.
To sleep?
It doesn't. It's cute. I like it a lot.
So, it's,
but
it's
I
kinda...
but I cannot remember what they all sound like.
So since we're being old school with sound effects here, I decided I would bring in this as well because I don't know what was this wrapped.
What's
this
that?
Wrapped something, and I've been holding onto this for several weeks too. Oh my goodness, the studio's on fire! That's old school. This is real cellophane. Okay?
That's amazing, Mike.
Isn't that a great sound effect?
Wow. Yeah.
Not as perfect.
Are you making fun of me?
Isaiah, you can't believe this is how we normally have this radio show.
This is how serious we get on this show.
So you can bring that back for Christmas, around Christmas time for the fireplace.
Yeah. We're as serious fireplace. As
there
a fire.
Go.
I hope, okay. There we go. Maybe this one.
I like the little frog. He's cute, too.
Crickets.
I like that. All right. The show today...
Crickets may very well describe the show. Keep going forward.
That's true. It might be what's going on the other end, too, or what people think they're hearing on this show. Oh, yeah. Well,
we have a big show today.
That's the only fun we're going to have today. I had to get that out of the way. We got the banner. We got the frog. We got...
Fire in the studio.
The fire in the studio. And on the show this morning, as I said, Mr. Brown Thumb is here in person. All the seed starting tips you could ever hope for, right?
Yes.
And you even sent a little thing in the E-N mail, the E-N mail. So we'll go down your list so we cover everything. I know you want to keep organized here, but...
Fantastic.
This is your big time of year. This is when you shine, right?
Yeah.
And
it
I don't
is.
Mean just your chrome, your
it
chrome
just
dome.
My chrome, my, yeah, hairless, chrome. My hairless head.
And when we're
it's
taking
when
photos, we might get blinded here.
Yeah.
So Mr. Brown Thumb starts us off today. Rick DeMaio weather, 9:45, as I said. More snow Monday, from what I understand. And then by the end of the week, we've got rain and flooding. Isn't that fun? And he sent me that stuff. So look forward to that. Second hour... very interesting because the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers did this report in January about Asian carp and what it'll take to keep Asian carp out. It basically separate the two basins, the Great Lakes watershed and the Mississippi River watershed. How do we keep them apart? Because they're connected now and the fear is a great, and we've been talking about this for years. And then so the Army Corps of Engineers comes out with this report, and they say, well, it'll take, I don't know, a quarter century and a $15 billion to $18 billion. And at that point, what happened was people's hair caught on fire when they heard that. It was just, are you kidding me? Because other people have proposed much easier ways of doing it. So to talk about that, Josh Mogerman from the Natural Resources Defense Council will be here. And Michelle Parker, who's at the Shedd Aquarium, she's the Vice President of Great Lakes and Sustainability. She will explain how they're teaching about Asian carp at the Shedd. Josh will handle more of the political end of things. And then he'll stick around because you might be aware of this. In Michigan, three women were arrested for locking themselves to equipment on Enbridge. I don't know if it's property.
Let's agree I'm going to be very angry in that segment.
You have made me very, very angry.
They had their court date earlier this year and were convicted of some misdemeanors, but also one felony resisting arrest, and are now going to be sentenced on March 5th. So I said, we got to talk about this. So Chris Wamoff from My Cats is going to be here to talk about that. Josh will stick around, Josh Mogerman from NRDC, because this is all connected to tar sands pipelines. It's connected to our energy policy. It's connected to a bunch of things. And I'll give you a chance to wax poetic if you want there, Lisa.
I'm sure you can't stop me.
All right. All of that's on the show today. Stick around, Mr. Brown Thumb, in a second on seed starting. And I know Sarah is going to jump in with some of that, too. But as you're looking out at the snow this morning, I want you to think about fresh produce, and I want you to think about joining a CSA this year. You know, that stands for Community Supported Agriculture. Now, come on, you've been thinking about getting deliveries of local sustainable food for a while. How about making it this year? How about signing up with Purple Leaf Farms? Yes, they're back on the Mike Novak Show this year. It's run by a friend of the show, Jessica Rinks. We know her as Snappy J Dog.
Snappy J Dog.
On Twitter.
President of the Forest Park Community Garden.
Yeah. She gets around. And she had a real success last year. I was part of that. I mean, I didn't actually grow anything. I just took her food. And I ate it. And it was awesome. And she grows vegetables, herbs, and cut flowers, which is unique. Using organic methods, no synthetic chemicals, herbicides, pesticides, or synthetic fertilizers. Now, you can sign up now, and starting in late June or early July, you'll receive 6 types of vegetables, 2 types of herbs, and 1 large mixed flower bouquet every week for 15 weeks. As I'm said, I think the flowers are the best part. I had a Purple Leaf Farm CSA last year, got the fresh flowers in my home every week, and it was really cool. Not to mention the fresh produce. Now, there are pickup locations in Elgin, Forest Park, Oak Park, Hines VA Hospital, the UIC Chicago campus, and more on the way. Or, new for this year, explore their personal delivery options. For more information, write this down. Go to purpleleaffarms.com or call 312-437-7542. 312-437-7542. Purple Leaf Farms. You're not going to regret it.
Hi, my name is Peggy, and I publish Chicago's only local magazine dedicated to healthy and sustainable living. Natural Awakenings is available monthly, and we provide the latest news and trends about healthful living, including alternative and complementary medicine, fitness, good food and drink, healthy kids and families, and even healthy pets. Natural Awakenings also talks about local sustainability, gardening and environment, energy conservation, and green living. We feature local news and a calendar to help you stay connected. I can guarantee that each month you'll discover a new health tip, a tasty recipe, a service in your neighborhood, something that makes your life better. Natural Awakenings is free and available throughout the city and suburbs or online at nachicagonorth.com. call us today at 847-858-3697 to learn more. That's 847-858-3697. Natural Awakenings. Feel good, live simply, laugh more.
Well, this makes sense. In 60 seconds, we're going to be talking about seed starting, and I'm going to tell you about one of the great companies where you can get those seeds. That's D. Landreth Seed Company. You might recall that last week's Saturday Blitz, and they do this every week at Landreth Seed Co. That's their Facebook page if you want to find it. Last week it was hot peppers. This week it's sweet peppers, like the pimento. Sweet pepper. We've all heard of pimentos, and we recognize them as the little red thing stuffed into the middle of green olives. But most of us have never seen the fresh fruit, and many of us do not know that a pimento is a sweet pepper. Then there's the Hungarian sweet wax pepper, a.k.a. the banana pepper. It was introduced into the United States in 1941. Which is kind of surprising because many of us believe it's been a part of American agriculture for centuries, but it has not. Or how about the orange sun sweet pepper? Most sweet peppers begin as a green fruit and ripen to red eventually. Some ripen to yellow, purple, or brown, but the rarest of all ripen to true orange. And that describes the orange sun sweet pepper. This pepper is not an heirloom, but it is an open-pollinated pepper. All of these and more are at LandrethSeeds.com or their Facebook page, Landreth Seed Co., or call 800-654-2407. 800-654-2407. It's time to be thinking about the growing season. D. Landreth Seed Company, purveyor of fine seeds since 1784.
It's time to step in the green room.
Life's a garden, dig it. You make it work for you.
And with that, we say hi. You're supposed to cough before I turn your microphone on, dude.
I tried to turn away.
That's your little button.
But
I didn't tell you.
That's right.
It's my job to prep it.
All right, now hit the button and cough. Let's see how that works.
Which one?
Practice the off. Now cough. Then now you can turn it back on.
Oh, awesome.
Look how you have control.
Wait. There you go. Now turn it back on.
Now you turn it back on. With the on button. There you go.
Oh, awesome.
There you go.
Well, that's all the time we have.
It's magic.
How you doing?
I'm doing good.
Great. What's new and wonderful for 2014? I mean, you're the seed guy. You teach people how to grow from seed. You must learn something occasionally yourself.
I learn something every day. Every day that you're gardening, I think you learn something. Every time you try to teach somebody how to garden, mm-hmm. you learn something yourself because you realize how little you do know.
I'm so happy to hear you say that because I feel like I know nothing most of the time when, you know, people are asking me stuff.
You know,
because
like
they look at me
fraud.
And they go,
I feel
oh,
like
really?
A fraud all the time.
So I shouldn't use that as an excuse.
No. I don't believe in, like, garden gurus and, like, people who think they're, like, experts or pros because everybody lacks some kind of information in gardening. Nobody knows everything. And then the more you do learn, the more you start losing information because you can only hold so much of it in your brain. And, you know, you get older. Start forgetting things.
There we go.
I don't know anything about that. Yeah. Wait. So what did you learn recently that kind of that surprised you?
See, this is a perfect example of something you learn that surprised you and that you forget. Like 2 weeks ago on Twitter, we were talking about starting seeds and somebody brought up a term that I hadn't heard before. And now I can't remember what it is, but it's sort of it was. I forget the word. I forget the name now. But it's
a term for what?
A term for like putting plants or flowers or bulbs, plants or bulbs in like cold storage in order to produce like a fake winter to get them to bloom indoors.
Oh yeah. I know what that is, and I can't remember what it is.
Sarah.
Crickets.
Oh wait.
See. So for like a whole week.
All right.
Exactly.
773-763-9278. I know that word, and I can't. And it's eluding me at the moment, but or on tweet us with that answer. It is the term for producing a fake winter in your refrigerator,
or I guess
so to speak.
Yeah, you could use if you have a cold greenhouse
or cold greenhouse. I forget what that is, but
is it vernalization.
Vernalization.
I think that's the word. Exactly, that's the word. See,
Is that it? Well, we'll see. We'll see.
I don't know.
Well,
she's
really good at research.
Wow. All right, somebody will tweet it. Somebody will post.
Pretty sure that's the word.
You know,
I don't know.
Now you're reaching. Okay, so you learned that, and that's because what was it you were preparing?
We were just talking about starting seeds on Twitter a couple of weeks ago during C-Chat, mm-hmm. and we were talking about like scarification and stratification, and somebody brought up vernalization, and so we were like, well, that's not really the same thing as like stratification. And somebody else explained what it meant, and we were like, oh, that's how you get, like, bulbs to bloom indoors during the winter when they're supposed to be blooming during the spring.
Mm-hmm.
Or you get, like, twigs and branches to bloom indoors for you, too, like,
I guess. But when you're forcing those.
Yeah, when you're forcing them.
That's a different thing. That's forcing a...
Yeah, I guess, yeah, it's different. But you're also forcing bulbs to bloom indoors when they're not supposed to. But it's, like, producing a fake winter period and then exposing them to spring temperatures indoors or mm-hmm. summer temperatures indoors to get things to... pop and bloom.
Kind of like you would with a Christmas cactus or something, to hurry it so that it bloomed in time for a particular event.
Well, yeah, because well, with Christmas cactuses and with, what's the other one I'm thinking of?
Poinsettia?
Well, poinsettias, and I don't say setia.
I know, that was just to wind you up. It was just to wind you up.
Wait, my hair is on fire. Yeah, with the Christmas cactus, you can set the buds by manipulating temperature.
And light.
And you do the same thing with poinsettias, really with light, not mm-hmm. so much temperature. What was the other one I was thinking of? Isn't there another one that you do that with? See? That's why... All the experts here. Wait. Let's go to the phones. Line one. Donald in Chicago, how are you?
Fine, Michael.
Oh, hi, Don. How are you?
I'm great.
It is Captain Coleus here on the line. And you're now, your new job, you're at the Kilbourne Park Organic Greenhouse.
I am.
How's that going?
It's a lot of work.
Have you got your seeds going yet?
I'm about to start.
See? And that's why we're talking about it. Do you guys know each other, Don
We've
Choi?
We've never met, but I'm familiar with his work.
Everybody's familiar with Don's work.
They have a great seedling sale in the spring of things they grow there in the greenhouse.
So the word is, Don?
Stratification.
Stratification?
Correct.
So that is the word.
No, it was vernalization.
We made fun of Sarah.
Oh, okay.
No, vernalization.
Gotcha.
That's what I was thinking of. Because we were talking about scarification.
Oh, I thought you were correcting us, Don. But
no,
you were just guessing.
Right.
You're supposed to know this.
Well, that was at the top of my head.
That was at the top of your head. You know, I still think we don't have the exact lowdown
here,
on this.
In horticulture, stratification is the process of pre-treating seeds to simulate natural winter conditions that a seed must endure before germination. So
okay,
maybe,
but that sounds like that's a little different from what you were talking about.
Right. So what was the other word? Vernalization.
Look up vernalization as well. And we'll see what we've got. Well, Don, what do you actually? Don came to me, and I did an interview with an author who. And what was the book that I gave you, Don? Because I don't even remember.
Heirloom Flavor,
right?
By Doreen Howard.
Doreen Howard, and she was on the show, and he was really intrigued. She has some wonderful heirloom. Plants in there that she talks about, and Don wanted some of those seeds, and so he said, hey, lend me that book so I can look up some of those and get some great ideas. And so I did. And did you choose any of those?
Oh, it's the foundation of my selection this year.
Wow. You should write to Doreen.
I should.
And let her know that. That's very cool.
Well, the different seeds she promoted, when I would contact seed companies, I would tell them that's where I got the selections from.
Oh, good for you. Good for you to give her a plug. That's really good. All right, I'm going to let you go because we're going to get back to our seed starting. What would be your first tip before I let you go, Don, about starting seeds?
Label.
That's a good one. That's very good.
That is so true. That is such a good tip because it is so easy to lose track of what you've got.
And they all look alike when they're young.
Yes, they do. You know, they all look alike when they're teenagers too.
Okay.
You know, just, well, especially like tomatoes and things. We had a thing last year where we had some tomatoes and they germinated, and then we kind of lost track of them and then found them again in these little pots, and they were real spindly and they didn't look happy at all. And by the end of the season, they were rocking, and they were producing these huge tomatoes for us. And that's the other thing. With a plant like tomato, don't give up on it, because those things, they just grow like crazy. You're nodding there, Ramon.
Yep.
Yeah. All right. Don, thank you so much for calling in, and good luck with the seeds. Keep me posted, okay?
Will do, Mike. Thank you.
Bye-bye. 773-763-9278. If you've got questions or comments you want to contribute to the conversation, we're talking to Mr. Brown Thumb about seed starting. And I'm going to go to your...
By the way, the answer to the question was vernalization.
It is vernalization.
It is vernalization. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So does Sarah win a prize?
A raise?
And Margaret Sheehan posted on Facebook as well.
Did she?
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Margaret. Appreciate that. I'm looking at your email here. You know what? Wait. So, Margaret, do you think we can send Margaret something?
I'm sure we have something.
You know what I've got?
What's that?
A brand new sponsor on the show.
Yeah. Well,
no, brand new. They've been on sponsor.
New-ish.
New-ish. Recycled Granite.
Oh, yeah.
And she gave me the wine stoppers.
Yes.
And there's a little hunk of granite on the end of it on a wine stopper, and it's really cool. Why don't we send one of those to Margaret?
Okay. I will get her information.
Get her information. We'll fire that off. Margaret, congratulations. Thank you so much.
Margaret could call the show, and I'll take it.
773-763-9278.
Call Margaret, and we'll get your address, and we'll send you one of those recycled granite wine stoppers. So, seed starting. Starting with the soil. The soil's the most important thing. Do you do your own mix?
Sometimes. Depends on how much money I have to spend that season for starting, or how much I'm starting. Mm-hmm. If I'm just starting a few things, I might buy one of my favorite bags of soil. If I'm starting a lot of things, I may have to go and, like, mix my own recipe type of thing. You can Google and get a whole bunch of different recipes. I mean, people have, like, their own, like, quirks, or so they have their own favorites or whatnot.
But for those people who don't have quirks and they just want to do it quickly, you can buy seed starter.
You can. I would suggest buying it from, like, a reputable garden center or a reputable supplier.
Not the box store. Don't go to the Walgreens and get it.
You know, don't use potting soil. Don't go and, like, get that big green and yellow bag that you see for $4.99 advertised in the flyer. Because that's not going to be good for seed starting soil, because it has all kinds of things in it you maybe don't want to grow your food in.
Yeah.
If you... I'm not sure.
You know, that's a really good point. You're growing food.
Correct.
So you want something...
And you don't necessarily want something that has fertilizer in it. You want to... You're talking about Asian carp later. A couple years ago, I found a company here in Illinois that did produce a fertilizer from Asian carp. So there's different ways that we can all help to battle the Asian carp problem. One of them would be using them as fertilizer in our gardens.
I have this, my own theory, not theory, plan, though, to become a gazillionaire is to go out with a baseball bat and just start whacking Asian carp and then sell it for fertilizer.
Right.
I don't know if that's going to work. How do you know you're getting something good? I mean, you say go to an independent garden center and ask them, right?
Right.
Which is what I tell folks all the time. And they say, well, where do I get compost? And I say, well, ask the people in your neighborhood what they like, the experts.
Right. Excuse me.
That's right.
Go to the independent garden center, and it seems like everybody around here carries, like, the same brands. I mean, if they're not buying the big brand that I think we all know and everybody's sort of against, anybody who listens to this station is probably against, the probably the big one you'll find is, like, Happy Frog or Fox Farm. Look for those crazy psychedelic labels, packaging.
Mm-hmm.
Look like old, like, Woodstock posters.
But you have to look for seed starter, right?
Correct. Also,
if you're making your own, you can buy what? Buy their compost and then create your own?
If you're making your own, it's pretty easy to do. Here's one recipe I found on the internet that said 4 parts screened compost or vermicompost. It was 1 part perlite, 1 part vermiculite, and 2 parts sphagnum, peat moss, and or coir.
C-O-I-R, which is what is made from coconut husks.
Uh-huh.
And nobody knows how to pronounce.
I looked it up on Wikipedia, and it is coir, K-O-I-R.
K-O-I.
It says K like a sky, and it said oi like voice, and then it said R, so choir.
Choir. Wow. Okay.
Choir.
You hear everything. But it's, as Jennifer Brennan tells me about Latin, you know, nobody knows how to pronounce it anymore because nobody speaks that language. Of course, choir is English, I guess. So anyway, so Sarah, I don't know if you have that recipe, but Mr. Brown Thumb sent it to you. So
yep,
you
should. We got it.
Okay, great.
But I have a question. I thought that like your seed starting mix, you wanted everything to be sterile.
That, you know what? That's one of the things that we were talking about recently on C-Chat too. excuse me, on Twitter. I feel like I'm giving the Republican rebuttal over here. And
do you need some water?
Maybe.
Marco? Mr. Rubio, would you care to respond?
You know, years ago, if you read a gardening book or a seed starting book, it told you to sterilize soil in the oven. And that was like the craziest thing, because if you ever did it, you know, your house stunk for days because you're cooking soil.
Right.
So, I mean, generally, if you use something straight out of a bag,
yeah,
or if you mix it yourself, it's pretty sterile. It's sterile enough to germinate your seeds. I mean, your seeds germinate when you throw them outside in the ground, you know, or when a squirrel or bird eats it and poops it out into the ground.
That's true.
So how sterile do things really need to be? The thing I would recommend to make sure you do sterilize would be like your pots, your containers, your things like that. Those things can carry like disease from one season to the next or infect your plants. But in terms of your soils, like just, you know, don't be a dirty pig, I guess, in your house, and your soil should be fine.
Somehow that's going to get quoted someplace. All right. So, well, while you're on seed starting pots, what do you like?
You know what? I think I like to have like a diverse collection of pots. I like to use a lot of things you find around the house. You can use like your yogurt cups, your butter containers. You can use like plastic cups, plastic soda bottles.
You know, it is a good idea to try to give one more use to
plastic before you throw it out.
Yeah, before you recycle it.
Well, it's in the bin. So now you just think it's like throwing it out.
Actually, you know, you wonder if it's really getting recycled. But.
Yeah, and you can roll your own out of newspaper. You can roll your own using an old aluminum can and a sheet of newspaper. You can roll your own pots. You could also go to the store and buy a bunch of biodegradable pots, and they're not even, you don't even have to go to, I guess, a traditional garden center anymore. I was in some discount outlet store the other day, and they had a huge selection of like biodegradable pots.
Are you talking about the peat pots?
Yeah.
Well, you know, here's the problem I have with peat pots. You grow the seed in there, and when it's in the house, you're taking care of it, and it works pretty well. And then you take it outside and you plant it, and if a little tiny bit of that peat pot is sticking above the soil line, the whole thing dries out and kills your plant.
Yeah, it wicks out. The wind wicks it out, or the sun, I guess, dries it out.
Yeah.
So you got to make sure you bury those really deep when you do bury it, like a...
Without putting your plant too deep.
Right.
A little tricky.
And you know what? It also helps you think about watering too, because if you're washing away the soil from the top layer, I guess, of your pot or your bed or whatever, maybe you should be a little bit more careful with watering.
Mm-hmm. So that we've got soil, we got pots, lighting.
Lighting, yeah. That's another like a big one to me. Most people can get away with starting seeds in the windowsill, like south facing windowsill, but. If you're just growing a few things, but if you want to grow a lot of things, the most inexpensive way to get a bunch of seeds started with artificial lighting would be to buy those shop lights at the hardware store.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
don't have shop lights here. But.
Yeah. You can get like full spectrum TA tubes, a couple of inches from the plants for about 12 hours.
Say that again. T8.
TA tubes.
It's a T8 tube. It's because it's full spectrum. Is that what does T8 stand? I'm not even familiar.
I have no idea. That's what it says on the packaging. On the ones that I've bought.
All right.
And 14 to 16 hours of sunlight is what you generally need to keep them at. So you might need a timer or not have a job. You know, seedlings will be your full time job then.
Yeah. No. You need a timer for that. And I think folks don't understand how close you actually have to, if you're using fluorescent bulb, how close you've got to put that light to the plant.
Yeah, pretty close, like almost touching the leaves. I usually have them.
And then you raise the light as the plant grows. Mm-hmm. If you don't assume that the plant is going to grow up to the light, because you're going to get spindly plants.
Correct. And that's a problem that a lot of people have when they start seeds in the windowsill. There's some that you can start off and some that you just can't start off in the windowsill because you don't have enough light. Like tomatoes, you'll definitely get spindly plants if you try to do tomatoes in like a west-facing window.
Yeah. No, use the shop light for that. I also note that temperatures for seed starting, and the thing you need to understand is that seeds different seeds have different requirements for germination.
Right.
Some like heat, some don't. Some like light. Some need to be covered with soil. Some need to be exposed. It's you need to know the specific seed.
Right. Excuse me again.
It's not one size fits all.
Right. But generally, for temperature, the temperature range that's recommended is like 60 to 85, with most falling in the 75 degree category.
Mm-hmm.
And we were talking about like tomatoes. I mentioned tomatoes earlier, but tomatoes and peppers, those you're going to need. From my experience, those you definitely need like a heat mat or a heat source to keep warmth underneath the seed as it germinates in the soil, or else you may have slow germination rates, or the seeds may rot if you're sowing them in a location that's too cold for them.
Mm-hmm.
And you were talking about light. Some seeds are light germinators, and some of them are dark germinators. One way to figure out easily which are which is that usually the tinier seeds, like your basils, your poppies, the smaller the seed, it's a light germinator. So you just want to give it a light dusting or light coating of soil. If it's a bigger seed, it's generally a dark germinator. So those get buried like 1 to 1.5 times their size.
Mm-hmm. Well, that makes sense. But again, check the specific seed. It's really, you know, with the internet, it's not that hard to figure these things out.
No, and sometimes reputable seed companies will print all the information you need on the back of the packet or on the inside.
Yeah. And then sowing. What do you like to, how do you, you know, with a larger seed, obviously you can do it with your fingers. But when you have those tiny, tiny seeds, what do you do?
One of the things that I like to do is I like to mix them up with a little bit of sand or vermiculite. So you can mix in your seed with a little bit of sand. You can put in like a salt and pepper shaker, or you can put in a matchbox and then just sprinkle it out. And it usually helps you keep an even sowing or planting of seeds.
By the way, folks, we're talking to Mr. Brown Thumb. In case you didn't figure out, we're talking about sowing seeds because we're at that time of year. And again, you know, folks are going to say, well, which ones do I do now? Well, you back time. And it has to do with when you think you can put stuff outside. So depending on what you have. What, for instance, are you starting anything this week, and what are you starting?
You know what? Usually this week I start a lot of my perennials, a lot of the outdoor seeds. Mm-hmm. I'll go and bury them out now and let them go. We were talking about stratification earlier.
Yeah.
Stratification is the cold, is exposing the seeds to cold and warm temperatures in order to get the seed to break apart and germinate. But I usually start poppies this week, but there's so much snow on the ground that I can't do it. So I have to wait, I guess, until next week when it all melts away.
Oh, please. Please. You're just making me nervous right now. I'm thinking about my basement. Oh, my goodness.
Right. But as soon as, you know, like March, you can try to start sowing some things outdoors, like the easy stuff. A lot of the cooler temperature stuff like peas, lettuce, carrots, radishes, Swiss chard.
And can you just throw those out there and when it gets warm enough they'll pop? I mean,
you know what? A lot of people have that kind of lazy approach to gardening, and I love it because I do that too. It's like some, you know how the back of the packet always says after all dangers of frost have passed, right? But anybody who's been gardening for a while knows that that's kind of BS, because if you grow sunflowers and if you grow tomatoes, which are two that in the back of the packet it tells you not to sow them until all dangers of frost have passed, anybody who has grown them or who's had a bird feeder knows that in the spring those tomatoes and those sunflowers are going to pop up on their own everywhere.
Right.
So how do they survive the winter and the ground being frozen if they're not supposed to be planted until the dangers of frost have passed?
Well, they're talking about when the plant's growing, I'm assuming, but you can always
protect the seeds germinate when it's their time. So you could, I mean, in theory, you could go out there and just scatter a bunch of things now, or when it melts, snow melts, and it'll germinate at its time when it's ready. It's just the way that the last year's sunflowers and tomatoes do.
So you've got a talk. Have we covered just about everything? I think we just anything we missed.
Looking at my list, I think we got everything.
Because I wanted to give you, before I let you go, I'll give you a plug, because you're tomorrow night you're doing something.
Yeah, the Manor Garden Club. It's their monthly meeting, which always happens on the third Monday of the month, and it's at 7:30 in the lower level of the Luther Memorial Church, 2500 West Wilson. And I'm giving basically, I guess, this talk, but in a longer format, of a seed starting workshop. People can bring their seeds, or just
and you'll have visual aids as well too.
Yeah, people can come by with their own seeds, and we'll help you get them started, or just come by and take notes.
Is it open to the public?
It's open to the public. Okay. The garden club's making it available to anybody who wants to come by.
All right, time and place again?
7:30 at the lower level of the Luther Memorial Church, which is at 2500 West Wilson. Just conveniently located off of Brown Line stop, I've learned.
Ah, Mr. Brown Thumb at the Mr. Brown Line.
By the way, we had a couple listeners who said that they've started kale, onions, leeks, celery, peppers, cabbage, Brussels sprouts, cauliflower, broccoli, and ghost peppers.
You know, the cool season you could get going, I would think, because you put those out early anyway, right, as soon as the ground is. And we don't know how fast we're going to warm up. We don't know if this cold will stay with us for. That's the weird thing about springs. You never know. I wanted to call attention because Sarah got me some other seed swaps going on today.
Peterson Garden.
Yeah, Peterson Garden Project seed swap today, 2 p.m. at Swedish Covenant Hospital. The Galter Medical Pavilion, which is the second floor, 5140 North California. That's the Peterson Garden Project Seed Swap, again, 2 p.m. at Swedish Covenant Hospital. Then on March 10th, Sunday, Jane Addams Hull House Seed Swap from 1 to 4. That's 800 South Halstead. It says discover new ways to nourish a sustainable food system through demonstrations, workshops, and conversations. Sharpen your seed skills in cleaning, swapping, making, and cooking sessions. And then the Chicago Botanic Garden next week, Sunday, February 23rd, from 2 to 3 p.m. There's a swap and lecture. The lecture is 2 to 3, and then 3 to 5 is the swap. That's at the Chicago Botanic Garden, the Alsdorf Auditorium. Ken Green, founder of the Hudson Valley Seed Library, will be there, and it's all free, but you need to register in advance to reserve your space. That information is on my website, MikeNovak.net, and I'm just looking here, and I realize I'm going to have to redo the Chicago Botanic Garden. I'll tell you what, go to ChicagoBotanic.org and look for the seed swap, because I'm running my cursor over the bold, and I realize I put the wrong link there. So
it's also on their Facebook page and on their Twitter.
On the Chicago Botanic? Good.
Yeah.
All right. That makes it really
easy. It's under heavy promotion right now. So you can find it easily.
And on my show.
Yeah.
Mr. Brownthumb, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Isaiah, did you enjoy your time here?
Yes, I did.
He's ready to go out and plant seeds. That's so great. All right. Thanks. And then as we wrap up, I play this.
In the Green Room.
Yiddick.
With Snoop Dogg there. Okay. Here's a tip from the Care of Trees. I often talk about the economic value of trees, but the human response to trees can be even more important. We feel serene, peaceful, restful, and tranquil in a grove of trees. We are at home there. The calming effect of nearby trees and urban greening can significantly reduce workplace stress levels and fatigue, calm traffic, and even decrease the recovery time needed after surgery. Trees can also reduce crime. Apartment buildings with high levels of green space have lower crime rates than nearby apartments without trees. Really, we often become personally attached to trees that we or those we love have planted. The strong tie between people and trees is often evident when community residents speak out against the removal of trees to widen streets or rally to save a particularly large or historic tree. Invite the certified arborist at the Care of Trees to take a look at your trees. Call 800-508-9466 for a free consultation. 800-508-9466 or go to thecareoftrees.com. The Care of Trees, a Davey company. Their business is people and their love for trees.
If you've ever filed a lawsuit, you know that it can be stressful, even traumatic. And if you've been exposed to asbestos, silica dust, or other lung toxins, you're going to need a law firm that can guide you through the legal maze efficiently and effectively. The attorneys of Penn Rakowski are exactly who you're looking for. They view each client and their needs as unique. They're focused on one thing and one thing only, lung disease. And they're based right here in Illinois and Wisconsin. The lawyers at Penn Rakowski have been representing individuals suffering from lung disease and their families for a combined 35 years. And because they're local, they can come to you. They've successfully represented asbestos workers, electricians, carpenters, machinists, and others throughout both states. Contact Penn Rakowski at dustlaw.com or call them toll-free at 888-LUNG-LAW. That's 888-LUNG-LAW. Penn Rakowski, local, committed, caring.
Hi, Mike Novak here. Did you know that on Sunday, March 2nd, my show will be live from Colatex Bakery and Deli? Now you do. Colatex is a food purveyor that does it right, and I want to help get the word out. So come on by and join our foodie radio party. Colatex is on Harlem, just north of Grand. There's plenty of free parking just behind the store and plenty of fresh food in the store. You can get all the event details at chicagosprogressivetalk.com.
Allergies acting up, trouble breathing, headaches, sinus pressure, you're tired, congested. Isn't it time to feel better? Breathe deeply and easily. Get rid of the symptoms that complicate your life. Dr. Bonnie Flaster is an acupuncturist and chiropractor who helps people get rid of allergies without using drugs, shots, or needles. Call Dr. Flaster at River North Wellness Center, 312-642-7545. Or go to rivernorthwellness.com to find out how to get your body feeling better so you can enjoy life again.
Spending more time at home these days? Give yourself some room. Renovate your basement or attic. You'll increase your living space and your home's resale value, too.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687 for your remodeling needs, including additions, renovations, and other home improvements. Rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
It's the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. I'm glad to hear I'm already getting tweets. People enjoying the segment, and they learned a lot from it. My guest in the 10 o'clock hour, Josh Mogerman, is in the studio. He says he learned a lot. You learned a little bit about that. So you're going to start your season next week? Is that it?
My son, Isaiah, is really excited about this stuff. So we are going to
You have
that.
A son, Isaiah, as well?
Isn't that crazy? It's a theme for today's show.
I guess it is. Let's go to the phone. Ricky D is there. Good morning, Mr. DeMaio.
Good morning, Mike.
It's going to be an interesting week, isn't it?
yeah, and as I was kind of trying to tell people last week, be careful about, you know, forecasting a warm-up in a pattern like this, you know, a week out in advance, and you know, next thing you know, you have, you know, storm systems coming through and the cold air doesn't want to go anywhere. And next thing you know, you're looking at a snowstorm for Monday.
Yeah. Let's start with that because that is coming in. And you say snowstorm, meaning how much?
It's a solid plowable, shovelable snow. And thank goodness we don't have to ship the snow off to Sochi. It seems like they've had quite a bit in the mountains. Have you been catching any of the Olympics and enjoying them?
Yeah, you know, actually, on Saturdays, that's a good Olympics day for me. I'm doing my work for the show and getting things set up, and so I have it on in the background. I've been watching some of that. That was a pretty intense hockey game yesterday.
Yeah, hockey game and watching it. What was interesting about, you know, the Sochi area is they have temperatures in the lower 50s, and you know, here are these athletes trying to ski down a ski slope where it's 35 degrees at the top and 50 at the bottom. It makes it a little bit challenging, kind of like what would happen here if we had a little bit of sleet and freezing rain and ice come through. It'd be people walking down the sidewalks of Chicago doing triple toe loops and triple sow cows up the sidewalk.
Absolutely. So are you telling me in terms of the snowstorm that several days ago we didn't think we were going to get this and then suddenly
no.
we are?
Yeah, and here's really what's happening, Mike, is the Gulf Stream has been incredibly warm all winter long. They've only had a couple of events that have pushed down into southeast and the United States and in the Caribbean that have cooled things off down there. But, you know, you remember we talked about earlier, Florida had record temperatures in the month of December. They've had a couple of days well into the 80s. And I was looking at the buoy reports. In between South Carolina and North Carolina and off the coast there between them and Bermuda, the Gulf Stream is averaging about 3 to 4 to 5 degrees above average. The other day, that water temperature was 70 degrees and 78 off the coast of the Bahamas, just to the south of, I believe it's Grand Bahama. And that Gulf Stream has been active, or I should say has been activating these coastal storms. So one of the reasons why the East Coast has been bombarded literally by 4 or 5 different events in the last month. Every time you get a little storm system coming through there, that milder temperatures of the Gulf Stream intensify these storms even further. Usually numerical models can't pick up on these 3 or 4 days out. So what eventually happens is These storms go up into what we call the Canadian Maritimes and into the eastern sections of Canada, and they basically kind of occlude. They spin out there and they sit and they block and they push all the cold air over portions of Hudson's Bay back southwestward. So if you go back and look at most of our cold springs or the longer lasting ends of winter for the Great Lakes, it's two things. You have colder waters of the water of the Great Lakes and very active nor'easters. And what that does is it keeps the cold air bottled up over southeast Canada. So anytime you try to get a little bit of a warm up in from the Pacific Ocean, it doesn't happen. And that's kind of like what's happening now. So you put all those things together, and the system 3 or 4 days ago that was supposed to come through for Monday looked like it was going to be 40 degrees and rain. By Friday, it looked like it was going to be rain mixed with snow and 33. Now it looks like a solid 4 to 5 inches. And lo and behold, we're under a winter weather advisory for 4 to 5 inches of snow beginning late tonight through much of Monday.
Wow.
So oftentimes, you got to be real careful on how far out you go with thinking that things are going to change, but the atmosphere says, I got other plans for you.
Well,
which I got to say does not make being a solar installer very easy right now.
As soon as we get a roof shoveled off,
it seems like it snows again.
Yeah.
And you know what I've noticed is this is the time when you really begin to see huge amounts of icicles begin to develop. Now, not that we haven't had icicles in the past, but when you get into these warm-ups, particularly with that stronger February sun, that's when you really begin to get into the massive icicles. And I always tell people, don't go out there with a broomstick trying to knock things off, because, Mike, where do they fall?
On your
right on your head.
On your noggin.
Yeah.
And I remember my dad years ago, he'd take this big long broom handle and he's knocking this 2-3 foot thing of ice, and he's kinda like when you're trying to catch something, you know, falling out of the sky, you're going left and right. When the icicle comes down, a couple times he would fall back. Trust me, icicles that are 2 or 3 feet long can do major damage to your head. So let Mother Nature take care of it, or maybe try to get some of the kids on the block to, you know, maybe aim some snowballs at them. But you can have some major damage to your rooftop and your leaders and your gutters when you get into the latter half of the month of February, because of that strong sun melts the ice, melts the snow, and then obviously the colder temperatures refreezes it basically automatically. So a lot of things that can do here over the last couple of weeks of February.
Wise words from our meteorologist. Now,
yeah, never thought I'd talk about
not just ice, a meteorologist, ice, but a safety champion.
There we are.
Hey, you know, I had an idea, Mike, to make curling more interesting.
Impossible.
No. How about this? How about downhill curling? What do you think about
that? Okay, or uphill, and then the curling block comes back at the guys who are rolling, and then you have to scatter to avoid being hit.
Just the bunny hill at Wilmot. You know, got this thing going down, and everybody's kind of trying to sweep it and get out of the way. I don't know. It's one of the most interesting but yet boring sports I've ever seen in my life, and yet it's in the Olympics. So go.
You know, the one that I just think is really weird is going out skiing with a rifle strapped around your shoulder.
Well, no, I think it'd be great if there was just two people, you know, how about them shooting each other, right?
Okay, let's move on to the weather here. Now, because we're getting this storm is going to be colder than we thought, are the temperatures for the rest of the week going to be mitigated as well?
Yeah,
several days ago, people were talking about maybe 50s.
Yeah, and that ain't going to happen. In fact,
yay, because if we start melting too fast,
right,
it all ends up in my basement, okay?
Right.
As we know. So what is going to happen at the end of the week?
Well, this is actually, I think, going to work out better for us, and people may not realize it, but if you start to get too warm too fast with rain, which is what it looked like we were going to be in for last week, it would have been catastrophic around here because there are so many piles of snow.
Mm-hmm.
And just driving around the city the last couple of days, particularly when you look at like Sheridan Road, where parts of Sheridan Road, you have to remove your car between like 7 and 9 in the morning or 4 and 6 in the afternoon. Usually when the days that people have to, or the times of day where people have to move the cars, if you notice, in the past, the city would take the plows out and scrape away all that snow and, you know, kind of do like what you do like the third or fourth day after Christmas. You go, I'm going to pick up this and I'm going to make it look nice. The city hasn't done that. So we have an enormous amount of snow piled up on top of these gutters and leaders, and we would have had massive flooding. So that's a good thing that we're not going to get that. We're also not going to get anything below zero. Patrick Sketch did a great study, Mike. He actually went back and looked at how many times or how many years you'd have to go back to get to the number of days of below zero temperatures that we've had this year. So far, up to 22. You'd have to go back the last 5 years total before you can get even close to 15 or 16 days of below zero. That's how anomalous this winter has been. So bottom line, 22 days of below zero, not zero or below, below zero. We averaged 7. The record's 25. We're not going to see that. But 62 and a half inches of snow. We got about a half inch last night, adding to our totals. We'll get another 4 or 5 tonight. And then we'll kind of be in a little bit of a quiet pattern Monday and Tuesday. Even if we get warmer weather on Wednesday and Thursday, we may be only looking at upper 30s into 40 degrees with about an inch rain. That'll be good. It'll be a slow melt off. And then, believe it or not, Mike, we go back into a cold pattern. Beginning next Saturday, for the next 2 weeks, we get right back into where we were before.
Wow.
This is an unprecedented cold. I don't think we're going to get below zero, but I wouldn't be surprised if there's another slug of snow that comes back at us maybe next Saturday or Sunday. That could be anywhere over 10 inches. It's a very, very interesting pattern and one that has tremendous...
Hello?
I know. Hello? I think there was something with your phone.
I heard something wrong there.
It sounded like 10 inches.
I could have sworn he said 10 inches.
There's a problem there.
I guarantee you between now and the end of March, we will see probably at least a 6 to 10 inch snow around here. You can just see it. Everything says big snow. Everything just says big snow.
Everything says big snow. Tweet that out there, Sarah. Okay.
This is horrible.
I told you last week.
Right?
I told you last week I haven't gone sledding yet, so I'm fine with this. Let's stretch it out.
You'll be
get out there.
And the snow that we get tomorrow will probably put us into the top 5 of all time, and it's only
we're going to break the record.
February. I don't know if we'll break the record. It'll be hard to do, but we'll definitely get close to it.
All right. Well, wonderful news that we're not going to get flooded. Not so good news that we're going to get more snow and cold.
Well, we'll get big puddles, put it that way. Big puddles and a lot of slush, but maybe not the massive flooding. So that'll be a little bit of good news.
Thanks, Rick. I'll talk to you next week.
Okay, Mike.
Bye-bye. All right. In the second hour, Asian carp and tar sands oil and, oh boy.
Illegal arrests.
All kinds of fun stuff. I hope you stick around.
This hour of the Mike Novak Show is brought to you by The Care of Trees, a Davey company. Their business is people and their love for trees. And by Recycled Granite, featuring eco-friendly split stone veneers and handmade products by individuals with disabilities. Go to recycledgranite.com. Here he is again, Mike Novak.
Well, your listeners were lucky. I was off and I was singing.
You thought you were singing into the mic, and really, you weren't.
There.
Go ahead.
That's my contribution.
Wait. And that's all I got today. I need more sound effects here.
Let's see. There's thunder, right?
Well. You need something a little larger than that.
Yeah, Lisa, that's a piece of paper.
Yes, it sounds like a piece of paper. welcome back, everybody. And, I noticed, Sarah, a lot of folks retweeting your Seed Starting 101, which is cool, from Illinois Extension. Sarah Batka put up link to Seed Starting 101 that you can look at. Lots of folks commenting on Mr. Brown Thumb being here. He was here in the first hour. And if you didn't catch it, you can always listen to the podcast, which will get posted in the next couple of days. And you can subscribe to that and get it sent to your very own computer. You are welcome to contribute to the show via Facebook, via Twitter, via phone call, 773-763-9278. In the studio, I'm very happy to have, as I mentioned earlier, Josh Mogerman from the Natural Resources Defense Council. Josh, welcome.
Good morning.
Good morning. What's your official title? I know you got an official title. Everybody's got an official title.
I'm just the talking guy.
That's it. I like that title.
Yeah.
Because, you know, there is... there's a rule of thumb that your importance is inversely proportional to the length of your title. So the longer the title, the less power you actually have.
Mine's very, very short. I'm the dude.
So you're a very powerful guy. And on his left is Michelle Parker, who's the Vice President of Great Lakes and Sustainability, which is a reasonably short title.
Ooh, I hope so.
At the Shedd Aquarium. Yes. It's so nice to have you here.
Thank
you for coming to the studio.
Absolutely.
I haven't talked about Asian carp in a while on the show. Not that things haven't been happening, although some folks would say things are not happening fast enough. And Josh is nodding. The way this works is we've got the educational component over there with Michelle Parker. And then we've got the political aspect of it with Josh Mogerman. And I think this is going to be a good balance. You know, it's interesting. I say I haven't discussed this in a while. And when you look at the things going on in the world and some of the issues that get discussed on this show, like what we're going to do in the second part of this hour, which is tar sands, oil, and energy policy, and frack sand mining and fracking itself, which are important issues. And then you say Asian carp. And the word carp is funny, all right? This is a punchline, all right? So, you know, it doesn't have a K in it, but it's still a funny word.
Carp. Well, if you're dyslexic, it's really, really good.
Right, exactly. Actually, I had a joke in mind, and it's gone yesterday as I was preparing, and of course I didn't write it down, so it went out. But it had to do with being dyslexic about carp. Yes, all that carp, something like that. But in the scheme of things, it really is serious. It does fit in with those other issues because we need to protect our Great Lakes. And I guess I start with you, Michelle, because that's what the Shedd is trying to get out and to educate people to, is the certain danger of not just Asian carp, but other invasive species in our Great Lakes. Maybe in a nutshell, you can start there. Why would Asian carp be dangerous to be in the Great Lakes?
Gosh, Asian carp, invasive species as a whole, have huge potential to upend entire ecosystems. Asian carp is the poster child of this these days. You know, they're working their way up the rivers. They're heading towards the Great Lakes. The main issue behind Asian carp is what they eat and how much they eat. So
they're huge.
They're huge.
I mean, we're talking 100-pound fish.
Yes. We have several at Shedd, and we have some big head carp that are over 60 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
Huge fish.
And there are two species in particular that we're worried about.
Yes,
right.
The silver carp and the big head carp.
Mm-hmm.
There are other species of Asian carp that don't get as much press that everybody's keeping their eye on. But when you hear the phrase Asian carp in the media, they're usually referring to silver or big head.
Could the others wreak havoc as well?
Oh, yes. Yep, absolutely.
Do they all fly out of the water, or are we looking at other... The main concern, I would think, is the fact that they are such great consumers of food.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So... on average, the percentage is a little bit controversial. You hear a lot of percentages. Shedd goes with about 20% of their body weight that they can eat every day. So if you're dealing with a 100-pound fish and they're eating 20% of their body weight in plankton every day, that's 20 pounds of plankton. And plankton is the very basis of the food chain. So if you have Asian carp in a body of water, say in the Great Lakes,
mm-hmm.
and they are chowing down on plankton, they will be out-competing our native species. So not only can they eat an enormous amount of plankton, but they also reproduce early and often. And so they just multiply, and that effect of wiping out the food chain just gets bigger and bigger and bigger. So when we think about Asian carp as a direct threat to the ecosystem, we do think about them in terms of really undermining the entire food web for the lake system.
All right. Let me play devil's advocate here. We have already had a number of species, exotic invasives, come into the Great Lakes. The lamprey, the zebra mussels, the quagga mussels. How do you pronounce that? Is that
quagga.
Right? It is quagga. Okay. Yeah, I got it right. How about that? and isn't there an argument to be made that, well, the damage is already done?
Well, I would actually say you can look at those invasive species as a lesson, that they have caused quite a bit of damage, and to get rid of those invasive species would be nearly impossible, if not fully impossible. So the very best thing we can do is prevent new invasive species. We don't want to find ourselves in a position where Asian carp have established themselves in the Great Lakes or any of the inland rivers and lakes that they might travel to from the Great Lakes, because once they're established, then you have a lifelong problem you have to deal with. Mm-hmm. So let's learn from the quaggas, and let's learn from the gobies, and let's learn from the lampreys, and make that decision of, we can't let these fish in because they're just going to cause these forever problems. Josh, do you know how much money we're spending on lamprey control these days?
I don't, but nationally we spend $1 billion every 5 years on aquatic nuisance species. So this is not an insignificant economic impact. It's something we have to spend a lot of money on nationally. And here in Chicago, we have a very unique sort of responsibility because we sit at the connection between these two really great freshwater ecosystems in North America. And the carp give us this really fascinating, unique opportunity, because usually with a biological invasion, you don't see things coming until it's too late. When you start to see this invasive species, game over, you're done. In the case of Asian carp, they make their presence very clear. Anyone who's watched these YouTube videos can see how we have this really amazing opportunity. And you know, pushing back on your original point, yes, we've allowed these ecosystems to become degraded, but saying, well, they're kind of messed up now, let's just let them get progressively more and more messed up, I think doesn't make a lot of sense. And I think there are a lot of people who care about both of those systems. You know, the Mississippi River system is sort of like the stepchild that doesn't get the love. You hear people from Peoria complaining all the time about, oh, you know, nobody cared about Asian carp when they were coming by the Illinois River. And that's true. We need to be thinking about both of these ecosystems and stopping the movement of species between the two. And that happens here in Chicago in the waterway system. When we reverse the Chicago River, we accidentally open the door to what has become an invasive species superhighway, where the invasive species that come into the Great Lakes through ballast water go through our rivers and into the Mississippi River system and infect vast swaths of the United States. You can look at...
Well, the Mississippi River system is fully 40% of the country.
Yeah, and you think about all the other tributaries that now break off of that. You look at Lake Mead and Hoover Dam, and there are startling photos right now because of the drought in the West. You can see the water levels have lowered, and you can see the sides of Lake Mead are covered in quagga mussel shells. Those quagga mussels and those zebra mussels that have made their way all the way to west from they started
from
that
the,
exit
from the Great Lakes,
from the Great Lakes through the Chicago waterway,
and they came
systems.
in the ballast of these boats. And now these ships aren't they're regulated in that you have to control the ballast water.
There is a new general vessel permit which requires them to deal with this issue more stringently. We actually think there's a lot of work that still needs to be done. We don't think the standard is strong enough.
That is Josh Mogerman from the Natural Resources Defense Council. Also in the studio, Michelle Parker from the Shedd Aquarium. All right, Michelle, so you at the Shedd want to get this word out, and you've got a curriculum, a new curriculum called Asian Carp Exploration. Mm-hmm. What's that all about?
Oh, this is fun. So we created this.
Oh, if you consider carp fun. All right. 100-pound carp fun. Yeah, okay.
Josh.
They're super fun. In a very dangerous way. Yeah.
So this curriculum, it's an online curriculum. It's for 7th through 9th graders. And they can go on with the help of their teachers, and it's a choose-your-own-adventure. So they can study the Asian carp issue from a variety of different stakeholder point of views. So they can be looking at it in terms of engineers, industrialists, whatever it might be. And then they work their way through the curriculum, and we invite them to create a YouTube video to present their own solutions. What do they think should be done? Mm. And some of them, I hope many of them, can actually take all the different paths so they can learn about it from all the different stakeholders. They'll upload these videos, submit them to SHED, and then when the contest time, you could say, is over, SHED is going to choose a video, and then we'll go to the school and help them create a professionally made, professionally produced kind of PSA about Asian carp.
Is this going to be ongoing, or is there, you know, one shot at this? And when what's the deadline for this?
As of right now, we're planning for the spring, and we'll see how it goes. If it's really successful, if there's a lot of interest, it's certainly something we'd consider continuing.
And you've also done a series of videos called, yes, High Stakes for the Great Lakes.
Yes, and both of these projects, the curriculum and the videos, were supported by the Great Lakes Restoration Initiative. And we had identified that there was...
Explain what the Great Lakes Restoration Initiative is.
It's a federal funding source that goes towards restoration and education and Great Lakes improvement opportunities. And it's a significant pot of money that goes out every year, hundreds of millions of dollars. It would be... I encourage all readers to look it up online and see some of the projects that have done, mm-hmm, that have been done. They're all around the basin. Really impressive projects. For us, we had recognized that there was kind of a two-step back need with this Asian carp issue. And that is that a lot of people didn't understand even the basics behind Asian carp. They didn't understand what the threats were. They didn't understand what the issue was. We have partners all around the Great Lakes Basin as far as Quebec City. And they did not think it was a basin issue. They thought it was a Chicago issue. So SHED... recognize this need to...
And let me explain something. That you've got these two basins. One is the Great Lakes,
yes,
which, and you know the size of the Great Lakes, and it covers that whole territory all the way out to the Gulf of... Not Gulf of Mexico, the St. Lawrence Seaway.
Yes.
And then you've got the basin, which is the Mississippi River Basin, as, right, we said, which covers 40% of the country.
Exactly. It's huge. It's huge.
And they're separate. And that's the other thing. I don't think... Because we're connected now, I'm not sure everybody understands that these are separate... The water flows in different directions.
Yes, yes. So they're connected through the Chicago area waterway system, which was a man-made system.
Right.
So we definitely recognize this need to take this very complex issue and break it down so people had something to work with. And so that's why we created the 3-part video series, which anybody can access on our website, shedaquarium.org/Great Lakes. We talk about kind of the glory and the splendor of the Great Lakes, what's at stake. We have a video solely on Asian carp and what the issues are behind Asian carp. And then the last video is about how issues like Asian carp can drive creativity and innovation in engineering, science, technology in the marketplace. And we talk about a few of the options that scientists and engineers are working on right now. We've started evaluating the videos. We show them before our aquatic show in the Abbott Oceanarium at SHED, and which sees about 2 million people every year. We've started evaluating them, and we've been getting some really interesting feedback. We're finding a lot of people are really surprised to learn about the electric barriers. They didn't know that they existed.
That amazes me. I mean, it was all over the news several years ago.
Yeah, people aren't aware of them?
They're unaware of them.
I just don't understand how it works.
That's another part of it. You need to watch our videos because we talk about it. So the electric barriers, just to make it very simple, I'm sure it's much more technical than this, is it creates an irritant in the water. And so as the fish are coming closer to the electric barrier, they become uncomfortable and they'll turn around and go the other way.
Ah, but as we're going to talk about when we come back from break, Not all of them do.
Right.
We're finding out that fish are going through the electric barrier. We found this out in July of last year or thereabouts, and it didn't get that information wasn't presented to the public until December. And you're nodding there, Josh. And that's disturbing, too, that it takes 6 months for us to even hear from our government about something that concerns us so greatly. Right. So we've done the educational part with Michelle Parker from the Shedd Aquarium. If you want that information, go to my website, MikeNovak.net. Go to this week's show. I've got the link to the Shedd and the Asian Carp Exploration curriculum, the videos, High Stakes for the Great Lakes, a lot of articles that we're going to get to in just a second, including a remarkable, I got to tell you, Josh, you turned me on to this Milwaukee Journal Sentinel story, which is fabulous and just outlines everything. I mean, they go through in such detail. It's just amazing. And we will talk about that. So hang on. We'll be back to Josh Mogerman and Michelle Parker. Now, if you caught this show a couple of weeks ago, you heard Julie Rizzo from Recycled Granite talk about how in 5 years, her company has kept 30 million pounds of granite from ending up in landfills. How did she do it? By creating methods, machinery, and markets to recycle scrap granite. Their recycled granite materials have been featured on DIY and HGTV shows, and their products include recycled granite pavers, split stone tiles, mosaics, and aggregates, and more. In case you're wondering, recycled granite is 3 to 5 times stronger than traditional concrete pavers, and these green products are the only 100% recycled stone tiles and pavers on the market. By the way, since recycled granite materials are manufactured from 100% post-consumer waste, they can earn credit points in the LEED rating system. One more thing, recycled granite established something called the Green Abilities Program. Individuals with disabilities go through a recycled granite artisan apprentice certification. The program teaches them how to specifically work with recycled granite waste. If you want to know more, go to recycledgranite.com or call 800-692-4642. 800-692-4642 or recycledgranite.com.
Hi, my name is Peggy, and I don't want you to be left out. Here's what I'm talking about. Each month, more people turn to Natural Awakening Chicago to improve their lives than any other health or wellness magazine. If you're a green, natural health, or wellness business, you should be part of the leading sustainability resource in the country. Natural Awakenings is packed with information that our readers use to find the products and services they need to live happier, healthier lives. Natural Awakenings is available for free each month throughout the city in north and northwest suburbs. We're placed in more than 1,100 area locations, ensuring the right eyes read about your products and services. We're also online at nachicagonorth.com. We're local, we're independent, and our readers will help you grow your business. Call us today at 847-858-3697 to learn more. That's 847-858-3697. Natural Awakenings. Feel good, live simply, laugh more.
Hey, kids. Yes, I know you're all whiny and impatient about the arrival of spring. Wait, did I hear the word impatience? Kind of. And you can read about how to spruce up your shade garden this year with Impatience in the January-February issue of Chicagoland Gardening Magazine. Jim Now is the manager of the gardens at Ball Horticultural Company in West Chicago, and he's got some tips for your shade, sun, and container plants for 2014. Now, you might be aware that a disease called downy mildew has struck Impatience in the past couple of years. But there are some varieties that can resist the disease, and Now helps you figure out which ones you want for your yard. However, there are other shade plants you should consider, like coleus and caladium, which he also features in the article. He also writes about sun plants like sweet spot roses from Tesselar plants, as well as Tesselar plants, as well as petunia, zinnia, celosia, and gomphrena varieties. I love gomphrena. Then there's my column on the inside back page. If you're really feeling brave, you might read that. Pick up a copy of Chicagoland Gardening magazine immediately. Better yet, get a subscription. Go to chicagolandgardening.com or call 888-265-3600. 888-265-3600. Welcome back to the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. In the studio with me are Michelle Parker. She is the Vice President of Great Lakes and Sustainability at the Shedd Aquarium. Josh Mogerman from the Natural Resources Defense Council is also here. We're talking right now Asian carp. And let's go to the controversy. Let's start with you, Josh, here, because in January, the Army Corps of Engineers, they had been pushed by Congress to come up with a report. They were saying, well, you know, maybe around 2015 we'll come out with something. And a few really smart people said, no, that's not going to work. You better do it now. And so they came up with these various solutions for how to fix the problem. And as I write on my website, people's heads began to explode after they did that. Why did people's heads begin to explode?
Well, so this report comes as a result of, like you said, congressional action. Senator Durbin was one of the co-sponsors of a bill that forced them to stop taking their sweet time and start getting to the hard work of designing a solution for this issue. The report comes out with much fanfare. There are a series of potential scenarios that you could do to take action to stop that range from nothing to some fairly elaborate systems that would physically create a barrier. But they had inordinately huge price tags and timelines associated with them. $15 or $18 billion, 25 years. Anybody who's watching this probably can agree that 25 years is too long to wait. This is an invasion that is happening in real time.
Maybe they're not aware that 25 years is a quarter century. I'm not sure that the Corps of Engineers has actually figured that out.
Oh, I think they're very aware.
And that's part of the problem. Yeah. A lot of folks see this as just a move to stall and muddy the waters, the carp-laden waters.
Yeah, you know, I think one of the things that's striking, you referenced the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. They have a reporter there, Dan Egan, who is really fantastic. He is the Great Lakes reporter in the region. He's been all over this story from the get-go over the years. And his takedown in the Journal Sentinel last week really stress something that I think all of the advocates have been concerned about, that $15 billion price tag is largely built around things that need to be done anyway. The Chicago waterway system, the Chicago River, the Calumet River, the rivers that we cross over every day here in Chicago, it's a broken system. It doesn't do very well in terms of dealing with the stormwater issues that we foist on it. It's really not that great for moving goods. We hear about issues with barges all the time. And it's broken. It needs to be fixed. The vast majority of the dollars in that $15 billion price tag that we keep seeing in the media all the time have to do with fixing the waterway. They're things we have to do anyway. The amount of money that we would spend to actually do the work to stop the movement of the carp and the other scores of aquatic nuisance species trying to move through our waterways from both of those systems is a small fraction of that and would take significantly less than that 25-year time period. And so I think advocates like us, like the Alliance for the Great Lakes, for NRGC, Sierra Club, a whole bunch of groups that have been really deeply engaged on this, I think we look at this as, you know, we owe the Corps of Engineers a thank you for making clear the point that we've been saying all along, that you can make a physical separation that would stop the movement of invasive species through our waterways.
But that they don't. they had like 8 different solutions.
Yeah.
And only 2 of them involved separating the waterways.
Yeah, a lot of them were sort of half measures that involved putting in poison chambers and kill chambers that would kill everything that happened to swim into the locks or into areas around locks. And we've spent a lot of money trying to clean up the Chicago River in the last few decades. That is completely counter to the direction we need to go to deal with this issue.
Mm-hmm. So, in essence, what made people's heads explode was this report came out and the price tag was through the roof. It really addressed a lot of things that are peripheral to the problem. It didn't really laser focus on this problem.
Yeah.
Folks said, what are you guys doing? And it seemed, according to some people from the articles I've read, that they're dragging their feet kind of and doing the bidding of certain business interests in doing this.
Well, I think intentionally or not, if you're crafting talking points for someone trying to advance the status quo and doing nothing, you lead with an insane price tag, an insanely long time period, and you bring in Deep Tunnel and the TARP project, which is something that really bedevils us here in Chicago. It's the system that we have for dealing with stormwater that's I don't know how many billions over budget, how many decades overdue, and their solution.
It's supposed to be finished by 2029, okay?
Well, but they're not sticking to that date. That's actually an ongoing
slide. So it might go
sliding.
Even longer.
It may go longer. It's,
they've been working on it since the 80s, haven't
absolutely.
They?
Absolutely. And so if you want to freight a project with boondoggle implications, it's bring that one up in Chicago. And that was front and center in a lot of the discussion was comparing it to in scope being similar to the Deep Tunnel project, which I think in the end makes it very difficult for decision makers to step up and take action here. And I think we're right now at a point where advocates in the region are trying to figure out ways that we can convene our decision makers and put together a reasonable, actionable, Midwestern thought through version of this that can really happen in the Chicago waterway system. So, like I said, we owe the Corps thanks for saying, yes, you can do this. And thanks for making it clear that we need to take over the process here in the Midwest.
Well, okay. You know, you guys are being real nice to the Corps here. I don't have to be. I'm the radio guy. But that's okay. No, I understand.
I'm being kind of facetious.
Oh.
But, yeah.
Oh, okay. I didn't see the air quotes going on there. Okay.
But this is radio. I'm not supposed to.
But the consensus from what I understand, and actually, Michelle, you can jump in on this too, is that we need to separate those watersheds. We just need to have a physical barrier, and we're not talking about a fence and an electric fence. We're talking about separating, filling up the canal and just separating those. Is that correct among, you know, people, environmental groups and scientists to make this work?
We are hearing that from a number of people in that community. SHED's role in the conversation is really breaking down the issue for the public.
Mm-hmm.
And then from there, they all have that foundational information and then can hear the arguments for either side. So we don't have a
position on this?
We don't have a position besides keep the carp out of the lakes. Whatever we have to do to keep the carps out of the lakes, that prevention is really key.
Well, I've got a position.
Okay. Good. Yay.
And it's one that's supported by a lot of scientists. And it says that if you want to stop this invasion, you want to stop these other invasive species from moving through the Chicago waterways, you need to physically separate those systems. And, you know, we did a few years back a study, sort of a back of the envelope, sort of a look at this with some with a bunch of engineers. And what we found was it's really not that hard to do. It's building a dam. It's not cheap. It's, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars probably, but it's not $17 billion. It's not $15 billion. In the run up after that, we started working with, studio gang architects, Jeannie Gang, MacArthur Genius Fellow, one of the biggest stars in the architecture world. She's really interested in this issue and how we live with infrastructure in the United States. And so we ended up doing a book with her that visualized what one of those barriers could mean for the city of Chicago. And the barrier would be over near the Fisk coal plant on the south branch of the Chicago River. And she visualized this really amazing rebirth of that area. And that, I think, is one of the core things we have to remember in Chicago. This is not a burden on Chicago. This is an unfortunate part of this debate has been other states piling on Chicago and Illinois. But this is an opportunity for us here in Chicago. We have failed and broken infrastructure. This is a way to bring lots and lots of money to deal with problems that we are going to have to fix one way or the other. And it's a way that we can bring new thinking and new amenities to people who live along portions of the Chicago River and really help stimulate those communities. I strongly suggest people go online, take a look at this really amazing bold vision from Studio Gang and from Jeannie Gang and a whole bunch of students at Harvard. The book is called Reverse Effect. It's a couple of years old now, but it is really a fascinating look at what dealing with this issue could look like and the opportunity it could be for the city of Chicago.
I can see Lisa already tracking that.
I've got it.
Reverse. So
and I'm a big fan of Jeannie Gang. I mean, I think she's done some just amazing things. And to have her weigh in on this issue and actually take the time to put a book together, I want to read it.
It's spectacularly cool.
When it comes to some of these big issues, sometimes it feels like it's too big to solve. What are we going to do? And I'm not a person to throw up my hands. And I'm also not, you know, educated enough or smart enough to handle these issues. And it's good to see that there's some very leading thought on it.
And meanwhile, something I alluded to before the break, which is, and I've got this article up on my website as well, another Milwaukee Journal Sentinel article. Let me just read from this real quick. U.S. Army Corps of Engineers Brigadier General Margaret Burcham is quite comfortable that the threat of a Great Lakes Asian carp invasion is under control. Quote, "We've got our electric barrier," she said before a January 9th public hearing on the Army Corps' new study that says it will take at least a quarter century to erect barriers to block the rapacious fish from swimming into Lake Michigan. "And we're confident that it is doing the job." End quote. And that, yeah. And the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel writes, "No, it is not. Not if you believe a video obtained by the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel that was taken by federal biologists last summer. Just one 3-minute clip reveals dozens of little fish swimming upstream through the swath of electrified water on the Chicago Sanitary and Ship Canal, only about 35 miles downstream from Chicago's lakeshore." And the fish aren't identified because they're on a sonar kind of thing?
Yeah, it's very hard to see what kind of fish they are from there. And it's likely that those are not Asian carp, but it points to a problem. And that is we are reliant on this last line of defense that repeatedly has shown itself not to be up to the job. It's lost power for long periods of time, for 13 minutes at a time. Mm-hmm. It's not what we want to be hanging our hat on.
So as we wrap this up, what we know that people need to go to the Shedd Aquarium and to their website and get educated.
Yes.
But what happens now? We've got this study that got dropped on us in January and people saying, well, we can't afford that. And a lot of it's not necessary or we should be doing it in another venue. Not venue, but, you know, it's something that needs to be done anyway.
First of all, the Corps is still taking comments on the study, the GLMRIS, Great Lakes and Mississippi River Basin Study.
Interbasin Study.
Yes, Interbasin Study. GLMRIS. Thank you.
GLMRIS.
So there are comments being taken on it. Who knows what's going to happen with those? I don't know. But it's important for the public to weigh in on these issues. And it's important for them to let their decision makers know that this is something they care about. There is this requires resolve from our decision makers to make something.
We're dithering,
happen.
By the way. We're dithering. Our decision makers, I mean, I'm glad that Senator Durbin wanted this study to come out, but every day we don't have a barrier is another day in which the fish could end up in Lake Michigan, and it would be a catastrophe if it began to breed in Lake Michigan. I mean, we don't know that it will. Why are we even taking that chance? It's the the precautionary principle. We do not practice that in America. We don't look at this and go, wow, that would be really disastrous if we let it happen. So let's not let it happen. No, we look at it and go, well, we're, you know, it might and it might not. If it happens, we'll fix it. What? That's craziness.
Well, I think it's arrogant.
Yeah.
And if I may, too, now that I'm saying now that the weather's warming because it's 25 degrees today.
Yes.
As we move into springtime in the summertime and people start going out to fish and recreate on the lakes, very important for people who are fishing to be mindful of their bait, because there's a very strong concern that Asian carp could get into the lakes through a bait bucket.
Ooh.
Yes. Juvenile Asian carp look like common bait. So we ask that everybody be very careful with their bait. They dispose of their bait properly, which usually involves throwing your bait out into a dumpster or freezing your bait.
Mm-hmm.
But while all this conversation is going on about infrastructure for prevention, it's also important to make sure that every single one of us are also doing our own part.
Right, like transporting emerald ash borer in firewood. It's the same principle.
Be very careful.
Okay, Michelle Parker, thank you so much for being here. Josh, you stick around. We've got another conversation coming up, and I hope you listening will join us for that. Here's a tip from the Care of Trees. With another round of snow scheduled to arrive, I guess this evening, the word of the day is patience. Snow and ice, especially ice, are capable of causing some real damage on your woody plants, but sometimes the best course of action is to do little or nothing at all. If it's possible, gently, and I emphasize the word gently, remove snow from trees and shrubs. If it has frozen to the plant, the best course is to let Mother Nature do her thing, which is to say, wait until the weather is warm enough for the ice to melt. Yes, there could be some disfiguration of the tree or shrub, but it's best to wait to see if the plant can recover on its own. I suggest you consult the certified arborist at the Care of Trees about your snow and ice problems. Call 800-508-9466 for a free consultation. 800-508-9466 or go to thecareoftrees.com. The Care of Trees, a Davey company. Their business is people and their love for trees.
Want to make a positive move in the housing market? Replace your siding and windows. You'll improve your home's look and energy efficiency, too.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687 for your remodeling and energy needs. Siding, windows, solar and wind power, and more. Rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
Yeah, the Mike Novak Show, lurching from one environmental catastrophe to another. And let's go to the phones and bring in our guest. Josh Mogerman is still in the studio, but I'm bringing in Chris Wamoff. Chris, are you with me?
Yeah, hey, how's it going, man?
All right, how are you? Is that how do you pronounce your last name?
Wamhoff.
Wamhoff. Sorry.
Yep.
I like Wamoff. It's like, remember Wham-O toys in the, I don't know you're old enough to remember that. Wamhoff. My apologies, sir.
No problem.
And Chris is involved with a number of organizations. One of them is MyCats. Tell us what MyCats stands for.
MyCats stands for the Michigan Coalition Against Tar Sands.
Go ahead. Sorry.
Oh, I just say it is looking a lot like a coalition. We have a MyCats, we have a Detroit Cats, and it sounds like potentially about to have a Shy Cats. So, wanting to give them a quick shout as it sounds like that.
All right, you Shy Cats, let's get the Shy Cats up and running. That would be good. I also see your posts on something called Tar Sands Free Midwest on Facebook. You can find my cats, and you just type MI. Do put a space bar and then CATS, and you will see them on Facebook as well, and you should like them, and you should get information from them. We are talking this morning about something that is ongoing in Michigan right now, and that is three people who are awaiting sentencing in connection with an Enbridge pipeline around Kalamazoo. Can you briefly give us that story, Chris?
Yes, on July 22nd, 2013, three beautiful ladies, Vicki Hamlin, Lisa Leggio, and Barb Carter, took peaceful protest and civil disobedience in Mach 2 construction equipment in Ingham County, Michigan. They were charged with felonious obstructing and so I got some feedback there. So it went through the trial. We wanted to take our cases to trial to maximize the publicity of the movement and what's happening with tar sands here in Michigan and with the pipelines through the company Enbridge. This went all the way up to trial and had a week of trial, including 2 days of jury deliberation, which finally ended in a guilty verdict. Even though these three women were out on bond, they were able to go through the trial from the comfort of their homes. Upon being found guilty, they were immediately incarcerated, and all three sit in Ingham County now awaiting sentencing on March 5th.
And from what I understand, they could potentially end up in jail for, what, 2 years?
2 to 3 years.
2 to 3, okay.
Yes.
And that's because one of the charges, I understand, is a felony charge resisting arrest. Is that correct?
Yep. The felony was resisting obstructing, and then there was also a trespassing charge, which was a misdemeanor.
Right.
And they were found guilty on both.
And from what I understand, the reports I read, what they didn't do a lot of resisting except to chain themselves to or lock themselves to the equipment there. Is that correct?
Even the police that testified against them made it a point to comment about the fact that they were very respectful, that they smiled and they were courteous.
Why the charge? Is this an automatic thing that happens?
Unfortunately, last year in Michigan, a vote of noncompliance or a response of noncompliance can also be considered obstructing and assaulting an officer in Michigan.
Mm-hmm. Well, I assume you were at the trial.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Did they have competent defense?
I feel they really did, and obviously the defense had to do something because it made a 2-day deliberation with the jury. So I don't want to get too much more legal beyond that, but it is clear, the jury did deliberate for 2 days.
So, in essence, what we have here, Enbridge is the company that spilled 800,000 gallons of tar sands oil into the Kalamazoo River. As far as I know, nobody's gone to jail for that. The river is still not clean, probably may never be the same again. Nobody has gone to jail for that. But you get three women peacefully protesting that fact. I mean, because they did this last year. They know what Enbridge had already done in the Kalamazoo River. And there's a potential for them to go to jail for 2 to 3 years simply for protesting a company that had already ruined miles of the Kalamazoo River. Do I have that correct, Chris?
Yes, absolutely. The only thing I would put on there is the EPA has also acknowledged at this point that it's been more than 1 million gallons and not 800,000. And we still have a couple hundred thousand gallons of oil in the bed of the Kalamazoo right now that Enbridge has, again, missed the deadline to clean up.
Josh, you're welcome to jump into this anytime you want, because I know that NRDC is very concerned about what this means in the larger picture of transporting tar sands. From what I understand of that spill, engineers had 16 alarm lights that they ignored, and then discovered that, I guess, a million gallons had spilled. And yet here we are dealing with the possibility of the Keystone XL pipeline coming into the United States and cutting our country in half with the same kind of mentality. With you know, there are people who say this is the safest way to transport this stuff. Well, obviously, it's not very safe. Or it doesn't seem to me. Am I wrong?
Well, so first of all, let me reinforce the Kalamazoo River is we were talking about the Chicago River being broken last segment. I was on the Kalamazoo last summer, and there are stretches where you stick your oar into the riverbank and you get an oil sheen coming up immediately. It's going to be a long time before that river is fixed, if it can ever be fixed. And this stands as the largest inland pipeline spill in American history. It's also the most expensive one. It's not finished. We're more than 3 years past. There's still work to be done. So it is a cautionary tale as we look at the changes in our petroleum infrastructure. We're completely rejiggering our oil system in this country right now, and it is bringing a significant amount of risk to your backyard and my backyard. It's not just pipelines. We're having in Michigan the pipeline we're talking about here, Line 6B. Has been hugely controversial. Before the spill in the Kalamazoo occurred, the federal regulators noted that there were more than 200 abnormalities with this line that needed to be dealt with, and Enbridge kept pushing it off, and obviously waited too long. It's worth noting that they didn't discover the pipeline leak. It was local utilities who called 911 after smelling oil, and they informed Enbridge, despite all of these alarms. They've been appropriately spanked for the way they handled this, this event.
What did they get fined?
Appropriately spanked in the media, excuse me.
Oh, but not by our own government?
There have been significant fines. I'm not thinking of the dollar amount. It's in the millions, but it's an insignificant amount of money when you look when you compare it to their overall work. I mean, it could easily be written off as a cost of doing business. And that ultimately is the problem that we have that we have in this country with oil pipelines, is that we don't have adequately funded or staffed regulators who are checking these things on a regular basis. And so we have these leaks spout all over the place on a very regular basis. And it is cheaper for the companies to pay those fines than it is to go through and aggressively not just comply, but aggressively ensure that their infrastructure and their pipelines are sound. But there's a larger issue that we have right now. We are suddenly producing a lot of oil in this country and in North America. You have lots of money coming or lots of oil coming from the Canadian tar sands, which is the most carbon intensive oil on the planet. If you care about climate change, you need to be paying attention to tar sands. But we also have this issue of oil coming out of the Dakotas, out of the Bakken. That is a place where we're fracking lots and lots of oil out of the ground. That boom has happened so fast, there aren't a lot of pipelines there. Most of that stuff is going out in trains. Many of those trains are coming through Chicago and other areas. We have this issue right now where increased oil production in North America is bringing risk into our neighborhoods, into our backyards, and places where people don't even know about it. You had a spill in Arkansas in suburbs just outside of Little Rock earlier this year in Mayflower.
We had one in the suburbs of Chicago.
We did. Actually, it's the same line. It's part of the same section. The Lakehead system, which is what 6B is a part of, goes through parts of Will County. And we had a spill not long after the Kalamazoo spill in Romeoville. It ended up flowing mostly into a retention pond, so we don't hear much about it. There wasn't a significant environmental impact.
And I want to get to Chris because we were talking earlier about the Asian carp and the potential destruction of our Great Lakes. You have called my attention to the fact that we've got one of those pipelines going right under the Straits of Mackinac.
Uh,
Last week in St. Ignace, Enbridge held a very controlled community public hearing about Line 5. Line 5 is a combination line that it will be synthetic light crude and gas and other utilities changing. This line is in the same shape that 6B was. It's 61 years old. It was a traditional gas line. And they want to pump synthetic crude at a capacity double what it currently is. They want to run from 240 to 500.
What could possibly go wrong?
Well, I wanted to kind of set that up. If this spills, it would spill at a faster pressure and than 6B did with a lighter synthetic crude. They acknowledged in the meeting they have 3,000 foot of boom. 3,000 foot of boom means they can secure 2 to maybe 3 football fields. This oil will come out at almost 700 or almost 100 gallons every 7 minutes. And they estimated that if there's a 5,000 gallon spill, it would affect a diameter of 25 square miles. This pipe is suspended. It has several broken supports on it. And they're not going to maintenance the line. They're going to maintenance the pressure areas.
And this is at the bottom of the straits there. It goes right across the straits.
Literally runs. It runs right under the bridge.
You said it's suspended. Is it under the water or over the water? Because you said it's suspended. It's, so it's under the bridge but above the water.
No, it's underwater.
It's under the water.
Yeah, all right.
I misunderstood when you said it was suspended.
Just to put that in, we're unfortunately running out of time. I want to get back, Chris, to what people can do to support the Enbridge 3.
We have on our website, michigancats.org, there's several ways. We're asking people if they want to do any kind of solidarity actions against tar sands. If you have the energy for it, do it. If you would like to just kind of write them and give them some support, we have address. People can only send 4x6 postcards and no pictures or anything like that. But we're asking people to just kind of write them. And then anyone around the Midwest, we're going to be doing caravans, trying to get people in. Their sentencing is March 5th. We want to try and get as many people there and support as we can.
So, all right. And we're going to keep track of that here. And I want to talk to you again in the future about this. Let's keep in touch. And especially if you come to Chicago, you need to stop in the studio.
Absolutely, man. Absolutely.
All right. And my apologies to the rest of the media who seem to have forgotten how to cover a story, because this is one that has not really been done at all in terms of our corporate press. So we'll do what we can to get the word out. I'm flat out of time. But, Chris, thank you so much. We'll talk real soon.
All right. Have a good day. Thanks for having me, man.
Sure. And for those of you who want the information, go to MikeNovak.net. Go to this week's show. All of that information, Chris Womhoff, information is there, Mike Hatz, and more, and how you can participate.
If you've ever filed a lawsuit, you know that it can be stressful, even traumatic. And if you've been exposed to asbestos, silica dust, or other lung toxins, you're going to need a law firm that can guide you through the legal maze efficiently and effectively. The attorneys of Penn Rakowski are exactly who you're looking for. They view each client and their needs as unique. They're focused on one thing and one thing only, lung disease. And they're based right here in Illinois and Wisconsin. The lawyers at Penn Rakowski have been representing individuals suffering from lung disease and their families for a combined 35 years. And because they're local, they can come to you. They've successfully represented asbestos workers, electricians, carpenters, machinists, and others throughout both states. Contact Penn Rakowski at dustlaw.com or call them toll-free at 888-LUNG-LAW. That's 888-LUNG-LAW. Penn Rakowski, local, committed, caring.
Hi, Mike Novak here, and I am stoked because on Sunday, March 2nd, my show will be live at Colatex Bakery and Deli. So come on by and join our foodie radio party. Colatex is on Harlem, just north of Grand, and there's plenty of free parking behind the store. During this live remote broadcast, we'll learn about their natural food products, such as artisan non-GMO breads, bulk flours and grains, organic produce, and deli foods that are prepared fresh daily and are out of this world. And don't forget, the Academy Awards are that night, so come to Colatex, say hello, and pick up some fantastic fare for your Oscar party. I think I'm nominated in a couple of categories. Colatex does food right. Come and see for yourself. You might even be on the radio. Get all the event details at chicagosprogressivetalk.com. That's Sunday, March 2nd from 9 to 11 a.m. The Mike Novak Show will be live at Colatex Bakery and Deli. I will see you there.
We're very excited about that, actually, going to Colatex in 2 weeks. That's going to be really fun. We got to draw straws to see who gets to go on site there.
And have me, because I already shopped there. I win.
Oh, so that's how it works. Okay.
I'll leave them out of house and home.
Well, I wish we had more time to discuss all of these issues. It's just it just goes by so fast. Josh Mogerman from NRDC, thank you so much for being here. And Michelle Parker's still in the studio, and she's her jaw hit the ground a couple of times while we were talking about this. And Oh, and I'm going to be speaking next week at the Southeast Environmental Task Force. They're showing the award-winning feature film Trashed. And I will be saying a few words afterward. Jeremy Irons was involved in that film, so folks can come by next week at from 2 to 4 at SETF. Go to my website for more information. Go green or go home.